Okay, so get ready for this. We're diving deep into a world where, like, typical high school drama meets actual royal crowns. We're talking about Royal Heirs Academy by Lindsay Duga. And oh my gosh, this book, it's like a total roller coaster. Like, imagine a super prestigious, like, international academy. Except the students aren't just like striving for good grades, they're competing to inherit a whole kingdom.
I know. What really got me was how Duga blends in those like classic coming-of-age tropes with this high-stakes political intrigue. So I've got secret identities, ancient prophecies, and even a dash of like romance brewing. It's like Gossip Girl meets like The Crown, but with like even higher stakes.
Right. And even the setting itself, it's like its own character, almost Terror Academy. It's on this secluded island in southern France, super exclusive, history of producing world leaders, and also some figures who met some pretty tragic ends. It just makes you wonder, what are they really learning there beyond the textbooks, you know?
There's definitely this undercurrent of mystery there. Like something darker is lurking beneath the surface. Of all that privilege and prestige, it really makes you question, like, does ambition at Almas Terra lead to greatness or something far more dangerous?
Right. Okay, so let's beat our players in this, like, royal game, shall we? So you've got Sadie Aurelia. She's our scholarship student from the small town called Ashland. She's like whip smart, driven, but totally out of her element in this world of, like, luxury and royal lineage.
Totally. And then she's just suddenly thrust into the spotlight as one of the potential heirs. You can imagine the shock, right? Let's talk about imposter syndrome. But with a crown on the line, it makes you wonder, like, why did King Leander even include Sadie in the first place? Is he genuinely impressed by her, or is there something more strategic at play?
Yeah. And then one, we had the other heirs, each raised in like a different corner of the world, each with their own unique skills. And let's just say baggage. We've got Alaric, Titus, and Emmeline. Their reactions to this whole heir situation, let's just say it's not your typical family reunion.
No, it's not. And what's so fascinating is how their upbringings really shape their approach to this whole competition. Like Alaric, for example, he grew up on the tough streets of Dublin. He's got this like rebellious streak, a chip on his shoulder, and he is not afraid to challenge authority at all. Then you have Titus. He is like the picture of privilege and polish, but he's hiding a secret health condition that could make this whole competition way more difficult than he anticipated.
Oh, wow. And then Emmeline, let's just say she's got ambition in spades and she's not afraid to use it. You're like, is she playing fair? That's the question that keeps popping up as you read.
You really start to wonder if any of them can truly handle the pressure, the scrutiny, and just the constant maneuvering that comes with competing for a throne, especially when there are whispers of an ancient prophecy looming over everything.
The prophecy. Okay, so it hints at a power struggle, maybe even a curse, and you just can't help but wonder if Sadie's somehow connected to it. It just adds this layer of suspense that just keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Totally. And then there's the academy itself, Almas Terra. It's not just a school, it's practically its own society with this rigid social hierarchy. You've got the elites at the top, the C-suites, like children of CEOs and diplomats, and then the scholars at the bottom, like Sadie. You can just imagine the tension, the rivalries, and the power plays that unfold within those walls.
Right. It makes you question, who's really pulling the strings at Almas Terra? Is it the headmistress, King Leander himself, or are there even darker forces at play? Because something tells me this competition is about way more than just academics and good deeds.
Oh, for sure. And what really struck me is how that social hierarchy, it mirrors the power dynamics of the real world. It makes you think about privilege, ambition, and the lengths people will go to secure their place in the pecking order.
Okay, so we've got four potential heirs. A mysterious prophecy, a cutthroat academy, and a kingdom hanging in the balance. Where do we even begin to unpack this?
Let's start with Elric. This guy goes from street fights in Dublin to finding out he's a prince. Talk about a life change. But his reunion with his father, it isn't exactly heartwarming. There's a lot of resentment there, a lot of anger simmering beneath the surface.
He's definitely the brooding, rebellious type. And you get the sense that he is not going to play by anyone's
Oh,
rules.
definitely not. But that doesn't mean he's heartless. There are these glimpses of vulnerability, especially when he connects with Sadie. You start to wonder if his rough edges might actually be what makes him a strong leader, someone who's not afraid to fight for what's right, even if it means going against the grain.
Okay, then we have Titus. Like, picture perfect on the outside, but carrying this secret burden of his medical condition. He's trying so hard to live up to these impossible expectations, and you just can't help but feel for him.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, how much is he willing to sacrifice for the crown? Will he push himself to the breaking point? Will he confide in someone and risk being seen as weak? Or will he just try to, like, power through the pain, potentially putting his health at risk?
Right. And then there's Emmeline, our resident ice queen. She's got this air of sophistication and control. But you get the sense that she's playing a very calculated game. Like, every move, every smile is part of some grand strategy.
Yeah. She's definitely not afraid to manipulate situations to her advantage, which makes you question her morals. But there are moments where you see these cracks in her facade, these hints, that maybe she's not as cold-hearted as she appears.
Right. It's like she's yearning for a genuine connection. But she's so used to using people as pawns that she just doesn't know how to be vulnerable.
Yeah. And then there's Sadie. She's carrying the weight of grief, the pressure of being the outsider. And she's constantly underestimated by the elite crowd, but she's got this quiet strength, a determination that makes you root for her from the very beginning.
Yeah. She's not just there to win a crown. She's there to prove something to herself, to honor her family's memory, and maybe even make the world a little bit better in the process.
I love that. And it's her arrival at Almas Terra that really shakes things up. She's a catalyst for change, challenging the status quo. And forcing the other heirs to confront their own values.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. She's this unexpected storm that blows through the academy, disrupting the carefully constructed hierarchy and making everyone question their assumptions. But can she survive the storm? And what will the academy and the kingdom look like in her wake?
That is the question. That's the beauty of this book. It keeps you guessing. Just when you think you've figured out the players and the game, Duga throws in a twist that changes everything.
There you go. And trust me, there are plenty of twists to come. We've only just scratched the surface.
I know. It's amazing.
So we've got these four heirs, right? Each with their own strengths and weaknesses, thrown into this, like, pressure cooker of a competition. But it's not just about, like, who's the smartest or the most charming. They're being tested in ways they never could have imagined.
Yeah, exactly. Right. King Leander. He isn't just looking for someone who can, like, ace a test or deliver a killer speech. Mm. He's looking for someone who can, like, handle the weight of a nation, someone who can make those, like, tough choices, someone who can lead with integrity and compassion.
Right. Which brings us to the challenges these heirs are facing. It's not all, like, fancy balls and royal etiquette lessons. Sadie, for example. She's dealing with more than just adjusting to the elite world of Almas Terra. She's facing prejudice from some of the other students. Those who see her as nothing more than a scholarship kid who doesn't belong.
Right, and it's not just like snide comments and icy stares. She's dealing with like outright sabotage, like someone's trying to frame her for cheating. It makes you wonder if some of the other heirs see her as a threat and are trying to take her down before she even has a chance to compete.
Yeah, it's like there's this undercurrent of suspicion and distrust swirling around her. And on top of all that, she's still grieving the loss of her family, trying to find her place in this new world while carrying that heartache with her.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see, but it also shows her strength and resilience. Like, she's not giving up. She's not letting the pressure break her. She's determined to prove herself, not just for the crown, but for herself.
Yeah. Then there's Titus. We talked about his hidden health condition.
Yeah.
Rheumatoid arthritis. It's not something that he can just ignore or push aside. It's a constant source of pain. And it limits what he can do physically.
Yeah, you see him struggling with simple things, like walking upstairs.
Yeah.
Or even holding a pen for too long. And he's terrified of anyone finding out, especially his grandfather. He sees it as a weakness, something that could disqualify him from the competition.
Right, so he's hiding it, trying to appear strong and capable, while secretly dealing with this debilitating condition. It makes you wonder, how long can he keep up the facade? And how will it affect his relationships with the other heirs? Will he push away those who try to get close? Isolating himself out of fear and pride.
Yeah, those are all good questions. And then there's Alaric. He's got a completely different set of challenges. He's angry, he's rebellious, and he's got this deep distrust of authority, especially the monarchy.
Which makes sense, given his upbringing, abandoned by his father, left to fend for himself on the streets. No wonder he's got this chip on his shoulder.
No wonder at all.
Yeah, that's, he wrote.
That anger, that distrust, it also fuels his desire for change. He sees the flaws in the system, the inequalities, and he is not afraid to call them out. It makes you wonder if his rebellious spirit might actually be what Ashland needs, like a leader who's not afraid to shake things up and fight for those who are often overlooked.
Right, but can he channel that anger into something constructive?
Yeah.
Or will it consume him? leading him down a path of self-destruction? That's the question that hangs over him throughout the book.
Totally. And then we have Emmeline. She's the master manipulator, always calculating her next move, always looking for an advantage. She's driven by ambition, a desire to prove herself, to win her parents' approval. But you start to wonder, is that all there is to her?
Yeah. Like, is there a heart beating beneath that icy exterior? Or is she so focused on the game that she's lost sight of what truly matters?
That's a good question, because she's willing to do some pretty ruthless things to get ahead. She's not afraid to spread rumors, sabotage other students, or even use people's vulnerabilities against them.
Oh, yeah. Like that whole incident with the online donation portal. She made it seem like Sadie was trying to cheat, even though it was all part of Emmeline's plan to discredit her.
Exactly. It makes you question, how far is she willing to go to win? And what will happen if she actually gets her hands on the crown? Will she become a tyrannical ruler? Or is there a chance she'll surprise us all and use her power for good?
It's hard to say. So we've got these four complex characters, each battling their own demons, trying to navigate this high-stakes competition. But it's not just a battle for the throne. It's a battle for their own souls.
It really is. They're all forced to confront their deepest fears, their darkest desires, and ultimately, to decide who they want to be.
Yeah. And there's the whole prophecy thing. It's not just some vague prediction about the future.
Yeah.
It's woven into the very fabric of the story. Mm-hmm. And it keeps popping up in the most unexpected ways.
I know. Like when King Leander's tattoo starts bleeding after he mentions the prophecy to the headmistress. It's this creepy, unsettling moment that suggests there are forces at play beyond anyone's control.
Ugh, yeah. It sends chills down your spine. And it makes you wonder, what role will the heirs play in this prophecy? Are they pawns in a larger game? Or are they destined to fulfill some ancient destiny?
Right. And the prophecy isn't the only mystery. Swirling around Almas Terra, there's something strange going on with the headmistress, Messiquilla. She's this powerful figure. Her motivations, they're never fully clear.
Yeah. She seems to know more than she's letting on. Like, she's playing her own game.
Yeah.
And the heirs are just pieces on her chessboard.
Oh, totally. It makes you wonder if she's truly loyal to King Leander, or if she has her own agenda. And what about that secret society within the academy? The one with the cryptic symbols and the whispered meetings?
Ooh, yeah. That's another rabbit hole. It's like, there are layers upon layers of secrets at Almas Terra.
Mm.
And the deeper you dig, the more you realize you don't know.
Exactly. And it's not just the adults who are keeping secrets. The students have their own dramas, their own alliances, their own hidden agendas, like Sebastian, the leader of the elites. He's got this charming, charismatic exterior. But there's something calculating beneath the surface.
Yeah, he's definitely not someone to be trusted. And then there's Trang, Sadie's roommate. And Tech Whiz, she's quiet, reserved. But she's got her own secrets, her own reasons for being at Almas Terra.
It makes you wonder, is she using Sadie? Or is their friendship genuine? Because in this world, loyalty is a precious commodity, and it's hard to know who to trust.
Right. And let's not forget about the Hibernia event. It's supposed to be this prestigious fundraiser, a chance for the student council to showcase their leadership skills. But it quickly becomes clear that there's more to it than meets the eye.
Oh, yeah. Like, why are all these powerful figures, CEOs and diplomats, attending this seemingly innocent school event? What are they really discussing behind closed doors? And how does it all tie into the competition for the crown?
Yeah, it's like Hibernia is this microcosm of the larger world with its own power dynamics, its own secrets, and its own potential for danger.
Exactly. And as the event unfolds, things start to unravel, alliances shift, betrayals are revealed, and the heirs find themselves caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, it's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. You know something bad is going to happen, but you can't look away.
The aftermath of Hibernia changes everything. The stakes are raised, the lines are drawn, and the competition for the crown becomes even more ruthless.
Oh, wow. It's funny. We've been talking about this intense competition, all these twists and turns. But what really stuck with me is how Duga manages to weave in these moments of real heart.
Yeah, that's what elevates it beyond just a typical YA thriller, right? You get invested in these characters. You feel their struggles, their triumphs, their heartbreaks.
Yeah. Right, like...
Yeah.
Take Sadie and Trang's friendship. They come from such different worlds. But they find this like common ground in their desire to make a difference.
Yeah.
To challenge the status quo. It's a reminder that like true friendship, it can transcend those social barriers. And even like royal rivalries.
Totally. And what I find so fascinating is how their strengths complement each other. Sadie's got this fiery passion, this willingness to speak truth to power. And Trang, on the other hand, she's more reserved, but she's got this incredible intellect and these tech skills that become crucial as the story unfolds.
Right. They make a pretty awesome team. It makes you wonder if true strength comes from embracing those differences, from finding allies who challenge and support you in equal measure.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not just about the friendships, the romantic relationships. They also play a significant role in shaping these characters' journeys. We talked about the sparks between Sadie and Alaric, the way they push each other's buttons, but also seem to bring out the best in each other.
Right. I love how their relationship isn't just about like physical attraction. It's about challenging each other's worldviews, about forcing each other to confront their own biases and assumptions.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, can love truly blossom in such a high-pressure environment where trust is a luxury and betrayal lurks around every corner?
Can they let go of their past hurts, their need for control, and truly allow themselves to be vulnerable with each other? That's the question that kept me hooked.
For sure. And then there's Titus. We see him wrestling with his condition, trying to balance his ambition with his physical limitations. And it's through his relationship with Sadie that he starts to confront his own vulnerability.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing to witness. How their connection allows him to open up, to share his fears and insecurities. It shows the transformative power of love, how it can help us heal, grow, and become our truest selves.
Totally. But let's not forget about King Leander. He's this looming presence throughout the book, a man of power, but also of deep regrets. You get the sense that he's made mistakes, that he's burdened by the weight of his decisions.
Yeah. Right. It makes you question his motives. Is he trying to make amends for his past? Is he genuinely trying to find the best heir for Ashland? Or is he just manipulating everyone for his own gain?
Right. That ambiguity is what makes him such a fascinating character. You never quite know what he's thinking, what his true intentions are. And it's that uncertainty that keeps you on the edge of your seat.
For sure. And let's not forget the setting. Almost Terra Academy. It's more than just a backdrop for this story. It's a character in its own right. This exclusive island, steeped in history and tradition, yet also hiding dark secrets.
It's like a gilded cage, place of privilege and opportunity, but also of immense pressure and scrutiny. It makes you think about the price of ambition, the sacrifices these students are making in pursuit of their goals.
Right, and the way the academy is structured. With its rigid social hierarchy, its focus on competition and achievement, it reflects the larger world, the systems of power and privilege that shape our lives.
Yeah, it makes you question whether true leadership can flourish in such an environment, or if it ultimately breeds corruption and a thirst for power at any cost.
So, Royal Heirs Academy. It's a thought-provoking read. It's not just a story about who wins a crown. It's a story about what it means to be a leader, the choices we make, the compromises we're willing to accept, and the impact our actions have on the world around us.
It's a story that stays with you long after you've finished reading. It makes you question your own ambitions, your own values, and what you would do if you were in these characters' shoes.
Okay, so to wrap things up, if you're looking for a book that's going to keep you guessing, that's going to make you feel all the feels, that's going to make you think about the world in a new way,
then dive into Royal Heirs Academy. Trust me, you won't regret it.
But be warned, once you enter this world of royal intrigue, secret societies, and forbidden romance, you might not want to leave.
Happy reading.